Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions, just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out mylifeinabook.com and use code AndySgirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com. with code Andy's Girls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Aaron and your life and mine. Knowing your business is a full-time job and I deserve overtime.
They always say not to push the envelope. What they don't always say is I'm allergic to adhesive. That's all I got for you.
No, wait, I'm super into it. Can I just say, I've never done this in 214 episodes, but as it was coming out of my mouth, I was like, wait, why didn't I say knowing your business is a full-time job and I deserve a raise?
Yeah.
What? That would have been so much better. Guys, no, everybody.
I like it. Do you want to go back and redo it again?
We can do it again. No, it's fine.
You just said it, actually. Can't. I like the way you delivered it. Yeah.
Thank you. Guys, just erase the first one from your minds and just embrace, much like the Oscars, sometimes we need a redo. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know what you're talking about. What Oscars? They didn't happen.
It didn't happen, but this definitely is. You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 214, and I'm so excited to have a new guest on the People's People's Couch. You know him as an actor, a writer, a producer, co-host of Andy Cohen Live, and host of The Feels on Radio Andy. Everybody, welcome John Hill. Yeah.
Giving myself a round of applause. I'll take it. Oh, you guys, calm down. It's just me. Keep going.
Oh my God, little standing
Thank you for having me.
Oh my God, no, I am so excited to have you. I have to say to the AGs, I've said this to John, but we have a mutual, we have actually several mutual friends in common, including Ben Rimmelauer, who I saw in a play with you, a performance, an adventure, an event at the Duplex a couple years ago. And I was like, what the fuck is the name of it? It was so funny. I was screaming the entire time. It was genuinely John Hill, like genuinely so good. And I texted Ben a couple minutes ago. I was like, what was the name of that? Because he remembers that I was obsessed with it. I was like, what's the name of that play? And he went, oh, it was Octobottom.
No, it wasn't. He got it wrong.
He did get it wrong.
He always does this. See, Octobottom was a better name. We were in my apartment and he was like, I kept saying like, I need to tell. We were going to do a show and I was like, okay, we don't know what it is and that's fine. We will figure out what it is. But what I do need, they're asking me for, and that is a title and some sort of photo. We were in my apartment here in LA and he was like, I was just like, give me a title, anything. Because we still didn't, and he was like, Octobottom. And I was like, fine, great. I didn't know what it meant. I still don't know what it means.
I feel like I have a feeling.
Sometimes I'm not good at processing very easy to understand concepts. I do not know what Octobottom could possibly mean. I really don't. Just like the bottom 8 days a week, I have no idea.
It's a little bit of like a big Thursday energy, I would say, for Octobottom.
What's that?
Octobottom.
No, like what's big Thursday energy?
You know how like Thursday, a lot of people, you know, like Thursday is the new Saturday or pre-COVID where people got their mess on Thursday nights.
No. And Octobottom, is that a thing?
Wait, I cannot explain Octobottom to you. That feels inappropriate to me.
No, it's fine. I don't know a whole lot. It's not that I'm not a slut, but I am somewhat of a naive prude sometimes, but not.
I love
but
that.
Sometimes I don't know. What is a Thursday night? It's people do it a lot on Thursdays.
Well, no, I was just making a joke that, you know, like Thursday is like the new whatever.
I love that.
It's like the day of the week. But you're having a party. You're inviting several people over to dance. You know what I'm saying?
Right. But are they all bottom?
I would have to. See,
I just don't know the mechanics of that because you have eight bottoms over.
Ben would know.
You're
going
to really have your work cut out for you if you have eight bottoms around. The other way makes more sense. Octotopums.
Oh, well, maybe that'll be the sequel.
Okay, anyway, thank you for coming to that show. It is, as I told you, I believe, over DMs, I am not. I have not processed the trauma of that performance, but I'm glad you were there because it really was a once-in-a-lifetime event. We did, however, do Octobottom here in LA, and it was a much higher quality of a show. Probably not as entertaining, but I stand by Octobottom LA.
Well, he told me that the actual name for the show that I saw was Two-Hand Job.
It's Two-Hand Job. That I understand. That makes sense to me. That I can picture.
And the show for the people who didn't have a chance to experience this theatrical delight was
yes,
about
paint the
you.
Scene for these lucky folks. Set this beautiful scene. It's upstairs at the Duplex, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense if you think about that name. But yeah, upstairs at the duplex. And you walk in and what happens? Wow.
And it was like a, it was, I could be completely fucking this up, but it was about you, it was like you're the first time you were reading your memoir of your time in life, right? Is that the correct, would that be the correct way to describe it?
Oh, shit. Yeah. Okay. Maybe you're right. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, look, the shows were kind of similar in content, even though the titles were Octobottom and Two Hand Job. But let's think about it. So actually, this is boring for people. Anyway, the show was amazing. I'm so glad you thought it was so talented. Good. Thank you.
I now want like a t-shirt that says Octobot. I feel like there is some sort of, Ben Rimlauer, if you're listening, merchandising opportunity. Like maybe throw it on a playbill and call it a day. I could see that selling.
Well, speaking of the Oscars, since my octopus teacher did win an Oscar, maybe Octobot has a future in documentaries.
I haven't seen my octopus teacher.
Okay.
But well, look. I don't, it doesn't seem, is it good? Have you seen it? I don't care about someone's friendship with a fish or whatever. I don't know. Is it great? It's probably amazing. It's going to change. And I love the environment, you know, because I am living
you
on
like,
it. Or whatever.
You like the, you're living on the environment. I, well, how do I say this? I've seen it twice. I love
God.
The octopus teacher. And I looked God. As I, no. But I also don't care. I mean, kill it. I don't care. But like, I don't really care about the environment either. But I really like a movie that will about it. It's like when you watch, when your friend sends you like a video of like a dog that has a wheelchair on the back legs. And you're like, oh my God. You know, it's like, you know, easy. I'm an easy target for like heartstrings kind of movies. And I get it. He was a freak. He went into the ocean all day long. Excuse me. My tea is quite itchy. I don't know. It's good. Yeah. Some people really hate it. They're like, I can't believe this Oscars is so terrible. I'm like, yeah, it is. And like, well, you know, that I cannot believe a movie about an octopus won. And I'm like, okay, well, think about the other movies that have won Oscars in the past. It's not that crazy. But yes.
Green Book won Best Picture.
So did Crash. These things are not that great all the time. I like the octopus teacher. I will defend it if I must.
Defend it. Maybe you just convinced me. Maybe I am meant to. I mean, I'm a vegetarian, so technically I support the octopus community. Apologies to any octopi who are listening to this and feel offended.
You just got canceled by the octopi community.
It was meant to happen, I feel like. And, you know, octopus, Octobottom, there's a whole lot happening today. So all eight parts of somebody's personality, if they feel
Thank you for coming
about-
to see our show. I love that you came and I love that you liked it. And I like that you think it was funny because I don't know. You know who else was there that night? Andy. Did you see Andy there?
Oh, was it a two-show night? I think he came to the earlier show and I came to the later one.
Oh, then you really saw a doozy. Were the Smith sisters there?
Well, I die for the Smith sisters. I didn't know Lauren and Mariah at that point, but I'm now.
And Rachel, they all three were there.
Oh, I don't know Rachel. Oh, I missed. If had they been there, I wouldn't have have known them.
They were there, I mean, and they laughed a lot. There are certain people when you're up on stage, you can hear your friends laughing. And I heard them laughing. I heard Andy and Bruce laughing. I'm sure I heard you laughing. It sounds like you really had a great time.
Yeah, I have.
And it was such a great show. It's so funny. I couldn't remember the name of it. And, but yeah, they were there. Brian Lord and Bruce were there.
Oh my God.
And Sanji Jenkins. Yeah, that was an epic night. It was two shows and definitely that was a lot. I love that you came. I love that you're familiar with my work in the downtown
your
cabaret
oeuvre.
Circuit. My oeuvre. And I love Ben Rimmelauer to the end of days.
Yes, he is a delight. He's got that wonderful manic energy that sometimes we just need a little kick of.
Yeah.
We just need to have a little bit of a Ben.
Did you know him before or after or during? I mean, I guess you knew during, but the Countess Luann days.
He announced he was going to be working with Luann on Andy's Girls.
Shit.
It was the first time he said
breaking
he, like,
news.
Had, it was a break. It was the first time he ever discussed it. And I was like, oh, my God, that is unexpected. So Ben, yeah, like said he had some sort of announcement, announced it during Andy's Girls. And I thought, this is very unexpected, and I don't know how this is gonna go, but I went to her very first performance in support of Ben, and obviously because I want to be there the very first time this happens to watch history take place in whatever form.
Oh my God. And
died for it. I had
where
like
was
one
the
of
first
the tables
show
that, it was at 54 Below.
Oh, the first one was before. There
mm-hmm.
Really?
She did a series there, and then I forget where she went before they took it, you know, they went national. And
on
then
the
it
road.
Became this huge thing until, as she will tell you every episode of New York, she is a cabaret star. And
right.
And it was a thing until COVID, unfortunately.
I was one of the and friends one time.
Oh, were you?
I was an and friend. It was horrible. I was terrible.
Why do you say that it was? Why do you say that you were terrible?
Because I kind of had a different vibe of what was going to happen when you walk on stage. When I walked on stage, I was like, "Oh, you don't have a sense of humor." I didn't understand that before I met her in person, or she does. It's just not what I was expecting. Because to work in those kinds of shows, you kind of did I say something out of line?
No, I was thinking.
Oh, sorry.
Of myself as an audience member, that the audience sucked. And I was like, I could totally see that if everybody is.
No, I meant her.
She is not. She does not.
Oh, no, the audience is amazing.
About this.
The audience is amazing. That's not
they
the problem.
They can be a little sloshed. The Lou audience sometimes is like way past turtle time, but
oh my God,
the show begins.
I can't believe you thought I meant the audience. No, I was living for the audience. And I was like, well, this is going to be easy. But when I walked up there, I was like, oh, because it was kind of like a banter moment with her.
Oh. Love,
and I was like,
love.
Oh, and I just was taken aback. It wasn't that it wasn't funny. Let me rephrase. It was just like,
she's not in on the joke.
Not really.
And
thank you.
That is the inner conflict. You're not breaking news in this. I think it's an observation that many of us feel. That as soon as I like got it for a second, I thought you were going to say something about absolutely, she is not in on the joke. It is something that her cast members have tried to remind her. She ended a friendship with Barbara Kay for saying, you're not Adele.
Exactly.
Because Lou is like, of course I'm not Adele, but I am Barbara Streisand. And don't forget it. I mean, she's like Lou with an L. She does not. She's that's the thing with her show is that like, It is a wonderful show for a specific community. And the best part of it is that she would have these wildly talented Broadway stars, comedians come in as the, you know, and friends. And then Lou would do her shtick. And people were screaming. I was out of my chair.
Yes.
Losing
that's the other thing
mind.
Is that it's not that, that the show's not funny because the show is roll on the ground belly. I screamed.
Yeah,
but it was different than having someone be funny with you or for you. No comments on, she's like raking it in or used to be. And I was super into it. But when I interfaced with her for the first time in front of an audience, I was like, oh, this is going to need to be a different vibe. And she was like, oh, well, hello. What, who are you? And I was like, oh shit, I cannot pretend to flirt with your ass right here. I asked Cheyenne Jackson to do it here in LA, and he's better at that than me. Like, well, we'll flirt because I'm the guy and you're the girl. And I was like, bitch, no, like we could do something else, but like I'm not pretending to be like into you, you know. She's like, who's this handsome man? And I was like, oh no, no, that's just not my shtick. But live for her and laugh really hard and
live for her.
Rimmelauer.
Live for her, live for Ben. I also feel like that is an aspect of what it means to be a Bravo Leb, because so much of what has made so many of these women famous, specific to Housewives, is this sense of a disconnection from reality, like an overinflated sense of ego, which we then celebrate in many ways, even though so much of the conflict comes from this person being entirely disconnected from real life. And some of these women become humble during filming, either through a fight with someone or through, in Lou's case, some like very public moment at a Christmas to remember, shall we say, in Palm Beach / West Palm. And that can be humbling. And then because of the humbling, people celebrate you again, which disconnects you with sometimes even more. Lou's an interesting example of that.
Yeah. And when they sometimes become maybe humbled, they become in some cases boring and they leave the show.
Yeah. Or they become, I mean, and then the humbling starts anew because wait, where are all the people that were sliding into my DMs? Where's my Tuesday night at 9 experience? Where's my sitting on the couch at Watch What Happens? Where's my monetization where I was getting all this money to do all these ads, but it turns out a lot of these advertisers are really interested in someone who's currently and consistently on TV. That can humble you. And then maybe for a small amount of them, they get back in some way. And it's like the circle continues.
Oh, yeah. Where's my merch? Where'd it go? Where's my merch? You know, it goes away.
There is something that I find very funny and very consistent to this, which is Bravo announced today the official announcement of this like Superstars, Super yes. Real Housewives Stars spinoff, which is, I am very excited for it. It's going to come to Peacock at some point. I would probably say later this year. From what word on the street is that people are talking and saying this is like the inception, the first time they're doing this, and then it'll happen again and again. And that's the hope. That's at least what a lot of people in the Bravo community are hoping. But there were some rumors that a housewife was going to make a surprise appearance.
Well, I saw this too. Yeah.
And it was someone who was like maybe an OG, maybe who people were thinking should come back to the show, should come back to Housewives. And a lot of people were like LVP, but there's no way.
I read Jill Zarin. That's what I read.
And then people were saying maybe Jill Zarin. And then Jill took to Instagram stories. It's like I saved for posterity a recording of it in my phone because I need to reflect on this if I get too big for my britches. But she was like with her sister and Lisa Wexler and like doing some Instagram story somewhere, I'm sure in like Westport, Connecticut, and said, you know, I'm here at dinner before. And she started the IG story by going, hi, which I mean, that's a dog whistle for people like me.
Right.
Who immediately instinctively go to Scary Island. And she said, I'm going on a little trip this week. She did, and a lot of accounts picked it up, and people like we were kind of pissed because I want to be surprised.
You want the surprise? I was surprised at that. I was actually surprised. I was genuinely surprised at reading that. Do you think that will happen, first of all? That she be the one?
I think that it's going to happen. I think that if she is the one making the surprise, if she is the one that's being discussed, if this is happening, and she decided to do a wink to people, an obvious wink to people on IG. My hope is that it had nothing to do with this show and maybe she was like doing a little sly, like getting attention. That is my hope. If she is in fact the person who was supposed to make a surprise, which now all of the women on the trip would know because they're being tagged and stuff, that to me is an example of someone who says that they have been humbled since coming on the show, who we all know want to come back, but it's like, Jill, this is why you can't have nice things like an apple. Like you can't even keep it to yourself. So I do believe it's possible, but I hope it's not just in the sense that if this has been ruined, I'm going to be upset.
When I read it, I thought they can't have more than seven at first because of COVID.
The house
won't allow more than seven, and that they hope an eighth comes at some point during the season. I read it, and of course, I'm sure you did too, that they hope an eighth can come because COVID restrictions lift and they can have eight. Not specifically, we're going to interrupt things with an eighth to throw things into a tizzy.
I didn't see that.
And I could be wrong. Oh my God, I am not the Bravo expert. No, but I read it because I had to read things for the news this morning for the show. I read it as, I had to read it a few times. I was like, oh, wait, they're going to surprise everyone with an eighth person. Is that what they're saying? And then I was like, oh, they can't have any more because of seven. And then I read it again. And I was like, they're saying they'll throw it. And I think it was both. I think they were saying, we'd love to, we're going to have 8th hopefully later in the season because we can open it back up. But also, of course, they were saying, like, we'll have someone come in. And then the first name thrown out there was Jill Zarin. And at first I thought that's really on the nose. Of course, it would be amazing. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's someone showing up in an island unexpected. And who else would that be but her? And I think that if that was their plan, they would have said to her, under no circumstances, they would put an embargo on her, and that she wouldn't, it's kind of like, if you were to say anything, deal's off. That's why I think you're right. I think that you're, I would side with you on that, because it would then ruin the surprise. Because how great would the surprise be if you just heard hi, and these people are on a vacation? Because Scary Island is, you know, just the quintessential thing. You know, I hadn't seen that till a year and a half ago. I hadn't even seen it. I lied and said I had seen it, but I never had actually sat down and seen it. All through Watch What Happens Live, I was like, yeah, I've seen it. Yeah.
It's the most important trip in Housewives. I mean, season 3 of The Real Housewives of New York is, to me, the perfect season. It is the ultimate season of Housewives of any franchise at any point in time.
I took the time, I watched the whole thing, and now I was like, wow, you're so dumb. Why did you not watch all this before? It would have made your life so much easier through your years of Watch What Happens Live. Why did you not? Anyway, it doesn't matter. But I finally watched it, and then I understood people. I understood the entire situation with Jill. Mm-hmm. I understood Bethany better. I understood... Mm-hmm. I had known Kelly Bensimone from not the show. I knew her throughout being out and about. And I was like, oh, I don't understand why she's popping for people. And I was like, oh, that's why, because she's out of her mind. I saw her jogging down the street or whatever in the show, but I didn't really understand. And Sonia, sorry, you guys have all seen this many times.
No, I love this. Continue. What about Sonia?
I was talking to my friend David, like, kind of like she was trying out what role she was kind of going to play, you know, mm-hmm. like, oh, I'll be mm-hmm. the like socialite thing. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, so sorry. How do I block my phone calls on this laptop?
I don't know, but I love it.
The thing with Sonia, like, she hadn't become the erratic dumpster fire yet. And almost like, by the way, she's my favorite housewife. And I do think in certain lights, we look alike.
You can get a little manic. Oh, I could see it too.
Yeah, we literally look, if you catch us in the right, if you're in traffic and the brake lights are hitting you just right, we look identical. But
Sonia's someone who went from 0 to 1,000, and she, it took her a second to recalibrate, which we saw during season 4.
By the way, Dumpster Fire is a compliment. That is a massive compliment. She didn't go, she was kind of like trying to play like a classy grand dame eccentric Manhattanite, but then she went to, you know, full-fledged mess to a certain degree. And but in that season I was like, oh, she's trying this on, and she was a friend, and she was like, oh, this is Sonia, this like class act, and she is a class act. It was just a different vibe from later seasons.
I mean, Sonia being like, you ruined my manicure pedicure, there is no more iconic a response when talking about Scary Island. And it's interesting that we're talking about Scary Island because Kelly put up like a 25 minute video this week. I didn't watch it. I fully support her in her journey, where she didn't refer to any of her cast members by name, but she said to put to bed, like one of those weird YouTube influencer videos of like, the streets are talking, like, I need to put to bed all the rumors. And she didn't refer to anybody by their name. And she kept on calling someone, referring to somebody as like a cast member with a health condition.
Oh, God.
Which, when you hear someone called a health condition, you think that they're ill. Yeah. My assumption is that she's talking about Bethany, who was pregnant during Scary Island, which is an odd use of words.
Wait, what was she talking about? I'm out of the loop.
She just was saying, like, in some way describing what happened. From what I understand,
like
she
a mental
didn't
health
actually
condition.
Reveal- she was literally saying, just, she kept saying somebody with a health condition. I have no idea of the context, but I don't know that Kelly does either, to be perfectly honest. She just sometimes uses these phrases that are meant to support her narrative, which I don't know that Kelly understands. You know, it's
People do seem to care. Like, we are talking about it right now. But if I were Kelly, I'd be like, that happened 10 years ago. So, like, I've moved on.
Mm-hmm. And also, give us then information. Or right. It's so passive aggressive to try to somehow burn Bethany while calling her a person with a health condition without providing any context or information of why you're saying these things. Like, instead of health condition, say that she's pregnant. But this is also somebody who during the trip was like, you're disgusting for going on vacation after your relative passed away. Instead of being like, I'm so sorry someone died, let's help you relax. I mean, Kelly doesn't live here, which again, that's the disconnection that can sometimes help a housewife in the moment until it becomes too much.
Right. Well, I hope that Jill Zarin pops up out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. I wonder if it is a surprise. I do wonder who that will be. It definitely would be amazing if it were Jill. But now, I wish Nene was there too. You're hoping for Jill. Everyone's hoping for Jill.
It's like, I want it to be Jill, except I don't want to know that it's very possible and likely that it is Jill, because I just don't. I'm one of those people. I don't want to necessarily know that information. I'm not following production as things happen. It's only when stuff goes to the Daily Mail of it all, when it's like Potomac altercation, Denise and Brandy, when there's other coverage. Then I find out about stuff, but I don't ultimately know how this season is going to go related to this. And I think it's interesting and fun for people to experience it as it happens, you know?
Yeah, I wonder too. I asked Andy about it today on the air, like, oh, they're leaving. They said they posted Instagrams that they're on their way. And I guess who was it? Melissa Gorga did. That they were
many of them did their PJ picks. Yeah. And
didn't they always say, like, there won't be a Housewives All-Stars until the shows all jump the shark? Wasn't that always the case? Has anybody asked about that?
I mean, have you asked Andrew? Maybe I should have.
No, but it did.
That's something he has said.
It crossed my mind today because we have not talked about it. And when I thought about, when I put that story in there, I was like, well, this is a Housewives thing. We should probably bring that up. And threw that in there, and I was like, wait a minute, it's an All-Stars thing. Because people ask him all the time. People have called in a million times. And that was always his answer. So I wondered if you guys, because I'm often late to the party, so I don't know. Did he make a comment? I was like, how did I miss this big thing?
He had said publicly exactly what you're saying, that it would be some sort of version of jumping the shark. But I think what he and the network have surely realized by now is that Housewives isn't going anywhere.
No,
and
absolutely
that's something that we
not.
Want.
Right.
And in this world where you can't, I don't know that it is, I don't know the context in which the franchise itself will have jumped the shark. We may not know that until 3 years after the fact.
Right.
But I do feel fairly confident that that hasn't yet happened. People still want to have these kinds of conversations. Andy Scrolls is all about like talking about the psychology and the behavior behind these shows. And I'm thanks to the Housewives and these stories and the storytellers, I don't feel like I'm ever going to run out of something to say.
Right.
And that's thanks to this world and this universe that I think has great staying power. And I think at a certain period of time, surely they realized this isn't actually jumping the shark. I could understand from other kinds of reality TV or scripted TV that when you do a spinoff of a spinoff, or like the, you know, celeb MTV superstar of it all, once that's like the third iteration of an original show, that could feel like people are reaching for content. But in this case, I feel like it's honestly a little bit of a show of thanks.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And the concept, as you're saying that, the concept of jumping the shark is probably being redefined, just like you're saying. You know, before it was like, there's a show on the air. Oh, it's going to get canceled. This show isn't just one show. It's a billion different shows, and it's going to evolve. Think about Survivor. Think about, for example, Miami going away and then coming back. These shows are not about, it used to be that way 15 years ago, maybe, like, here's a reality show. People stop liking it, we're going to cancel it, you know, and then it'll get rebooted in 20 years. Housewives is not like that. And probably the best example of that, or one of at least, you know, that's going to have, even if it were to change what it looks like over the its inception, mm-hmm. which it has. And it's not even about spinoffs and stuff. It's just, it seems very natural. And just to kind of use the language that they've used a million times about, say, someone coming onto a cast and they're like, well, if it's natural for that person to be a housewife, it'll make sense. Like Kathy Hilton or whatever. It's like, you know, these women have all interacted. They interacted at Andy's baby shower. They've interacted mm-hmm. at events a billion times. So it's not like they don't know each other. And it's not like they wouldn't go on a vacation. I mean, may hear it, whatever. But it makes sense to me that they would go on a vacation. Like, it's not out. It's not just like, okay, we're going to throw you in a jungle with turnips for a bra. You're going, okay, now let's pitch them that. But you know what I mean? It's kind of like, oh, mm-hmm. these are housewifey ladies and they're going to go on a vacation mm-hmm. and we're going to shoot it as well. That to me is perfectly fine. Makes sense. It's not forced. It's not like I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. It's they're going on a vacation. The Turks and Caicos, they'd probably be going anyway. So it's going to be a housewifey thing. It's fine. It does not seem jump the sharky to me. It seems the opposite of that.
And for a lot of people, jumping the shark is like an example, the, you know, substitute word for desperation, right? Where it's yeah. like, we don't know what kind of story it is that we're going to tell. So we're going to pull this thing and stemming from what's his face on Happy Days, who literally jumped the shark
because
on a vacation in Hawaii. And they felt like that was yeah. the death knell for the show, for the plot.
Because people were leaving the show, watching the mm-hmm. show. The viewers were leaving and they wanted people to watch, even if it were just one last, right, desperate attempt to make them watch.
And I feel like when it comes to desperation and the jumping of the shark at all, it really does feel, as with our conversation about humbling, it is also, I think, a specific individual moment in time for some of these housewives. And sometimes you quote unquote jump the shark, you're reaching, you're doing too much. I think of like Tamra Judge a little bit in that context of like when you go too far or it feels too produced, sometimes staying that extra season can make sense because yeah. it's the evolution of everybody else in the cast saying, we see you jumping the shark and we're going to talk about this as a part of the plot. And sometimes it leads to somebody having a little, you know, going too far, needing to have a little pause where it's mm-hmm. they've gone like way too far left. It's not necessarily about doing it for the show, as I would say for Tamra. Maybe it's their own challenge or struggle that they're going through. They jump the shark just in their experience being too inside this world and need a moment. And sometimes they're able to come back.
Yeah, there is that moment when you're like, okay, this person now knows they're on a hit TV show. Like thinking about Ramona is, you know, has now been on TV more than Jen Aniston, you know, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like the redefinition of what it is to be a person on primetime television. And that's totally different now than it was before. And there's that moment where the person's like, oh, you're not documenting my life. I'm on your TV show. And mm-hmm. then what happens is I think they go, oh, well, I'm not getting X, Y, and Z. But you're actually not an actress on a scripted television show. It is about your life. So it's like, well, do I do things for the TV show? Am I doing things for my life? And I'm sure it's confusing. It's got to be confusing. So people may jump their own sharks, you know, and try things and be desperate and because they don't want to lose the show. I mean, I get it. It's got to be a hard thing to mentally navigate.
As far as the navigation process and the kind of evolution of the Bravo of it all, which has changed so much since it was like I still remember the It Factor.
Oh my God. The It Factor. Me too. Me and Andy used to watch it before he worked at Bravo.
Oh, that is genuinely, guys, I don't know how you would be able to find it now.
You can find it. It was Daisy Egan.
Oh, can you? Oh yeah. Daisy Godfrey. Egan.
Jeremy Renner,
all of these then struggling performers or performers at different points of their journey as actors. It was very much a docuseries following these people in, I think, New York and L.A. There is a very poignant moment where, and this was years ago, where there was an actress whose name I forget, unfortunately, who's talking about, I think, a great callback or something. She looks out. She's on a rooftop. Do you remember this? She's on a rooftop in New York. She's looking out. She feels so hopeful for the future. And I could be lying, but I believe this is what happened. She looks in the future, and the thing below the screen on the bottom of the screen said, like, September 10, 2001.
Oh, I got chills. I just got chills. Out,
it was a wild time. It was a wild time to be a New Yorker, to be a performer, to be a Bravo viewer watching all of this stuff. And in many ways, I think, reset the idea of narrative storytelling, which has gone through many generations of content since that time. I mean, the It Factor for, I mean, you are a Broadway, you know, performer. Surely, did you find yourself reflected in some of that, in some of those stories being told?
Definitely. I'm trying to think of, I've never thought of that before. Because also the advent of technology was changing. And Andy and I used to watch that show. We both were passionate about it. Oh, wait, we watched The Effect. He and I actually watched more Showbiz Moms and Dads, Show Dogs Moms and Dads. Did you watch that show?
Oh, I don't think I did.
Really? Actually, okay, was It Factor on Bravo?
Bravo.
I thought it was
because
when he was at Trio, when Andy was at Trio for Bravo, that's where Showbiz and Show Dogs Moms and Dads was. That you need to track down. That was World of Wonder. That's how I know Randy and Fenton from World of Wonder,
really?
Who produced RuPaul's Drag Race. If you don't know who World of Wonder is, they produced Drag Race. And that was back in the day. And I came out to LA and I worked with them for off and on for the better part of a decade. But It Factor, right, that was on Bravo. I feel like I watched that maybe a little bit before I worked, or before I even met Andy. What year did it air? Oh, I guess before 9/11.
It was,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was a hot second ago. It's wild when I think in my head. So I don't remember if I was watching it live as it happened or through some sort of rerun-ish process, but it was incredibly interesting. Also thinking of these people who 20 years ago were working their ass off to try to remain, become, ascend in the world of trying to support yourself as a working performer, as an actor. And you think of Jeremy Renner, who has created such a career since then. And it's interesting to see, but it reminds me of the idea of Bravo and narrative storytelling, because you yourself have produced so many shows, and shows at the beginning or for many people prior to starting their own Bravo journey. I'm curious for your thoughts about how storytelling has potentially changed since then.
Now that I'm thinking about this, I haven't thought back that far in forever, but back in the day, people thought that being on, you know, when that show aired, The It Factor, it seemed, you know, being on a documentary series was kind of like a novel thing. You know, these people could still be actors having been on the hardcore documentary series. Then it became reality show, and then actors who wanted to be serious actors would never in a million years dream of it. Then it changed. It's kind of swung back the other way now. But there for the middle aughts, that's kind of how, you know, that's kind of how it seemed. And people's agents in New York would be like, don't you dare be on Survivor, you're never going to be an actor again. And I think that was probably true. You know, Elizabeth Hasselbeck obviously went on to be on The View, but like, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of, people didn't know the trajectory. But yeah, I was in Broadway shows, and the reality TV was just kind of debuting, but then storytelling was popping off because these people from documentaries were like, oh, we'll make a documentary series. And I started to work in that world, and it was, the philosophy behind producing those shows was very much like, it wasn't like, you know, go lie to whoever you're following and make them seem like it's a documentary. You know, you're really making a scripted show. It really wasn't that. I never felt like that was dishonest to say. I was always like, we are literally following the real story here. I mean, I worked on a million shows. The difference was competition shows. On those shows, they had to be locked down. Like when I worked on Project Runway and Top Chef and those kinds of shows, because of rules, because of like Bravo legal, and those shows have legal departments where you can't mess with stuff. You have to, it has to be a competition. So that was clear cut for me in terms of the storytelling. You know, you can ramp up the tension with music and the storytelling and red herrings and stuff like that, the edit, but you can't manipulate someone winning.
Outcome.
Really? You know, I mean, the judges will do what they want, but it's never like, oh, hey, this person would be better to win. Just, you know, make them win. It really came down to, you know, who the judges want to win. But in terms of documentary, you know, a reality docu-soap rather, you know, kind of pre-Housewives, they, you know, started out to kind of showcase people who lived in that environment, like Behind the Gates, as mm-hmm. OC was originally called, you know. They, you know, Bravo was finding its audience with aspirational kind of people. And like, going back to, I can't believe you never saw Show Dogs Moms and Dads. It's kind of like weird.
I don't think I did.
You need to go find it. I think the philosophy was like, people would always, the mandates from networks was always like, come to us as producers and creatives, like what we want to hear pitched to us are weird worlds no one's ever thought of before. So back then it's like, okay, wannabe actors, brilliant back then, perfect. No one was really, there was no the starlet with Faye Dunaway. This is before that, you know what I mean? That was and you know, okay, dog you know, trainer contestants or whatever, like that was a weird world. So then it became like, okay, you know, really rich people who lived in gated communities. Okay, great. So, you know, then the world evolved as it did. Is that your question?
Yeah. No, I love it. No, that you absolutely it is. And it's interesting that, you know, when we talk about when does something go too far, in terms of you've run out of stories to tell, or it feels like something is inauthentic or inorganic to the actual core of the show itself. It's interesting that Orange County was created in many ways as an offshoot, an ability to capitalize on Desperate Housewives.
Right.
And Orange County were, I mean, I didn't see this most recent season, but is 15, 16 seasons in, Desperate Housewives way jumped the shark. I mean, which became sort of almost a fun, people enjoy sometimes the jumping of the shark too, when it's like this stuff that doesn't necessarily make sense, but we're all a part of the community discussing it. Mm-hmm. And so you can still sort of celebrate that, even if you don't necessarily, you can't really figure out the navigational tool of the plot. But look at Orange County, which is still on TV however many years after Desperate Housewives goes off the air. So it does sort of show that however this was created, they have certainly been able to capitalize on following and dissecting and unpacking different levels of privilege and escapism specific to these women's stories and not have run out of time.
I'm just now thinking of this as you're saying it. But kudos to Bravo too for being able to look at the landscape of culture and society and look at what creatives are pitching them all the time and think, okay, here's what people want. Here's what people are passionate about telling. What is also happening in our cast, you know, all mm-hmm. the time. You know, you were talking about Desperate Housewives and I was just kind of going through a Rolodex of shows, you know, and there have been so many shows, scripted shows that you could have made a reality show after that about mm-hmm. some other world like that. For example, just one that popped in my head was like Good Christian Bitches. Remember that show with Kristen Chenoweth?
Oh my God, Kristen Chenoweth.
And it's like, there's no reason why that show shouldn't have been a huge hit. But at the time, mm-hmm. it was a bad timing. You know, it was bad timing. Mm-hmm. Like people didn't want a show, like people don't love a show with the cuss word in the title. They really don't. Yeah. They can watch The Bachelor and have a totally misogynist show and have people call each other bitches and sluts and whores behind their back and mm-hmm. slapping and competing for a guy and lying and cheating, having sex on camera, but don't say the title bitch in my house in front of my kids.
Right.
That, mm-hmm. as weird as it sounds, I do understand. And mm-hmm. then, so, and also people didn't want to make fun of mega churches. That kind of, or any sort of, but they can make fun of it on their own. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. I can talk about, you know, my mom as much as I want, but if you say anything bad about my mom, I'll kill you. That, like, everyone's like mm-hmm. that. I'm not saying me personally, mm-hmm. but that's that idea. So it's kind of mm-hmm. like, but then look at what happened. Churchy stuff became a big, like, story point in OC. Mm-hmm. So it's like, before that wasn't really a storyline. That wasn't really anything anybody wanted to touch because it was kind of a personal thing and nobody wants to mock that. But now, like, baptismals in hot tubs and stuff, like that stuff is up for grabs to laugh about. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you're gonna come here and like, get fake titties out the wazoo, and then mm-hmm. you're going to go to church all day and then come tell me why I'm terrible and you're drunk while you tell me that. Like, that is, to me, brilliant. And I want to see more of that all the time. But I see why that's like, you don't want to make a whole show about that. But I'm just saying kudos to Bravo for being able to go, oh, that's something people will probably want to dive into now. When that came around, you know, they followed that, those kinds of stories, and let that be in the background of some, other people's stories. See what I'm saying?
Yeah. And it, I totally do. And I also think, just like with Good Christian Bitches, that it is sometimes all about timing, and you don't know what you have sometimes right. until 3 years after the fact. So you're just watching the show maybe grow and change and adapt to whatever we're going through as a society and a culture. And it just so happens that the timing of Orange County, which didn't happen the first season, right. but as the show evolved and changed, it became a part of our pop culture and our understanding, because they kind of grew in parallel.
Right.
And I was watching the Oscars last night, and the only note that I wrote down during watching, which, P.S. you guys, on the AG Patreon, there's an hour-long special episodes with Kevin Fallon, senior entertainment reporter at the Daily Mail, at the Daily Beast, rather, where we unpacked all things Oscars. But Lee Isaac Chung, who was nominated for Best Direction for Minari, had that quote when they were sharing the quotes of the directors of what mm-hmm. inspires them. What would you tell someone on the street in 20 seconds is what you do. And I think it was during this point, though I could be completely wrong, Lee said, film must respond to life, not the other way around.
Yes.
Which to me,
I just got chills again.
Right? It's so poignant, yeah. so interesting. But also, as a sociopath, I was like, oh, I could totally see that applying to Bravo.
Right? Well. And it kind of does to like mm-hmm. on certain occasions. And I think a lot of times I have a couple of friends who are really, really, really successful screenwriters. And some of the best screenwriters mm-hmm. do not understand what I'm about to say, including me. I'm terrible. Mm-hmm. But some people, I had someone tell me once, like, you know, most TV shows and movies right now, they write dialogue for actors to say based on what they think, how actors talk, not how mm-hmm. real people talk to each other, because mm-hmm. that's actually not that interesting maybe to write. It's a lot of stops and starts mm-hmm. and rabbit holes and weird things. So, and we in turn now talk like actors. So mm-hmm. it's super strange, you know, like, which is it? And like, it's also... Yeah, exactly. Like art, you know, life shouldn't be imitating the movies, you know, or if it should, maybe, you know, pick and choose.
Yeah. And I feel like that's also the conversation that sometimes people struggle with when it comes to understanding how to cover very important and real moments in time. You know, whether it's the COVID of it all or the incredibly important and powerful Black Lives Matter movement. And you think about the fact, the argument that I would make, which I think every housewife on Atlanta would potentially share, and a lot of critiques of Orange County might as well, which is, this is our reality of what is happening right now. Of course we're going to cover it, especially if the storytelling is about our lives and we are in the fight for our lives, which is why I think it's so important that there were episodes like the first episode of Atlanta this season, and yeah. there's the opportunity for discussion, as there has been in the many critiques against Kelly Dodd, because, you know, it's important to use our platform, power, and influence. Sometimes that is in the ways of understanding someone who is diametrically opposed or is the absolute antithesis of what I believe, so that you can at least understand that perspective, even if you agree with it. And sometimes it's a conversation about, you know, responsibility in storytelling. There's a lot of nuance there, I think, to unpack.
There was one point where shows, I was working in development for someone, and they were like, okay, well, here are the big trends that are coming around. So what shows can we develop mm-hmm. for blah, blah, blah. And it was like, okay, the biggest thing, like, for example, I worked on Tori and Dean in Love, like this first and second season-ish. Did some like pre-pro for season one, then like actually worked on season two in the field and everything. But there was a point, like 10 years later, they're like, okay, well, they're turning, like when the divorce and like drug use and stuff happened, they were turning around episodes every other day. And that was a big change for me, because all I wanted as a producer was like, let's make it about what's really happening. It's less of a lie mm-hmm. for everyone. It's like, okay, these guys had a conversation. Bam, here's how it went. Instead of waiting 8 months, these things used to take 8 months to cut them, cut the whole show, then present it. It's like, yo, there was a pandemic in between. Why are you kicking yourself in the feet or whatever, kick yourself in the shins, whatever that phrase, mm-hmm. that saying is mm-hmm. tripping over your
kick
own
yourself
feet.
Wherever.
Like, there you go. So with like technology improving, you know, and being able to send producers cuts from around the world and have it done in real time, it made more sense for this stuff to actually reflect the real world a little bit more. So like, not to use the term news, but it was newsy reflected the times, you know, so you didn't have to wait a year. Cause then you're like with the Dorian Dean thing, I know that's an amazing journalistic feat, but you know, what was happening was what you were watching. What, you know, mm-hmm. like that's why Instagram Live is now, you know, why would you go on a docu-soap where 800,000 people maybe will watch it when you can go on your Instagram Live and 3 million people will watch what you're saying in the moment? So mm-hmm. that's affecting TV, that's affecting content, and that's affecting, like when you're saying the Housewives All-Stars thing, you know, they're getting on a plane today, you know, it's almost May. And if they have a series of season that debuts in late summer, that's pretty quick. Otherwise, it's like
it is really
10
quick.
Months to a year after that stuff starts shooting. And I like that. I think it should be quicker. You guys want, I mean, fans of this stuff, myself included, like I want to see COVID stuff. I want to see how people dealt with the pandemic, you know, in 8 months. I don't know if it's going to be the same. It'll be different.
Right. I mean, there is something to be said for watching this moment in time where, I mean, I remember in February of 2020, I'm an event producer by trade and I was working on a gala honoring Anna Wintour and I was mm-hmm. like talking to the Vogue team thinking, this is, you know, it's going to be like a couple weeks. we really thought that. And then it yeah. was a day, it was like one day in, I don't remember even the month, if it was February, it had to have been the beginning of March where it just changed, you know, mm-hmm. it became like the, okay, well, we don't actually know what this is going to be. So to watch that on camera and to watch that on television, however many months later, I think it's a significant moment. You also are hopeful that people are doing their best to be safe and responsible with that moment because, you know, there it is a platform that is being translated for people as either a don't do this or this person is giving me permission to, you know. But just being able to have that as a little bit of a COVID bubble, you know, I think that's it's not, I don't want to use the word exciting because that's not the intention that I have, but it does feel historic. You know, well,
and as someone who is living in the world and in a world where we have media and TV, you know, we are stories that we are told, we want them to happen while we're experiencing stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. If we're going through this, I want to see what the stories that I follow, how you know, what they have to say about it too, you know.
Yeah. How does that influence the points of discussion that you have on Radio Andy on your shows when it comes to the pop culture of it all, the breaking news of it all, and also the Bravo intersection where so much of pop culture is a wink and a nod to Bravo storytelling?
I like breaking news the most. What's mm-hmm. exciting about it is that I'm not great at rehearsing my, I'm not a journalist. And I wish I was. I wish that my mom was a journalism major. I just, I don't spend my entire, whatever. I'm not a journalist. But I like breaking news because then when you do, and I like being live. Something Kelly Ripa said mm-hmm. once is like, you know, being on live TV or radio or whatever, it's easy for you if it's easy for you. Some people can't imagine. It's mortifying to be live on air. I could never do a podcast. This is mortifying for me. Just kidding. It is hell on earth for me to be on anything recorded in terms of a podcast or anything, because then you have to worry about what you're going to sound like later, what you've said. You want to do it over again. I can't. It's very hard for me. It's a different skill. I can be on live TV or live radio all day long. I like it. And what I like is the breaking news stuff, because then mm-hmm. you say what you're going to say. So you have to mm-hmm. be prepared with what you think about things so that you don't mm-hmm. say something insane and then have to like clean up the wreckage later. And I think we do a good job of that. But I think breaking news is really fun for us. And as far as Bravo goes, Andy doesn't say, we don't prep beforehand. He's not like, hey, here are the talking points I don't want to discuss. Just like he is with other people who come and watch What Happens Live. He doesn't pre-interview them. Like, what do you not want to talk about? Of course, they, you know, people say like, hey, stay away from this. But he is one of his specific singular skills, I think, is being able to ask people things that no one else can ask them, because he's never looking to sell anybody out, and he's hoping to give them a way to talk about things in a way they wouldn't feel comfortable with otherwise. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how he treats our show. He's not like, hey, listen, don't ever ask about this or that. It's just like this All-Stars thing. When you said it, I genuinely didn't know that had not been announced before when I read it. And I was like, and I put it in the news like, oh, he'll probably be like, hey, that's old news, who cares? And I didn't know that it wasn't, and he and I have never discussed it. And so that's exciting to me. And we can also discuss it on the air, and it's not like we are literally having whatever pre-production meeting we would have beforehand. We're having it live on the air, and that's exciting to me.
How does the temperature in the room change when you are having those conversations and maybe a Bravo Leb calls in, or you have a guest who is specific to this world, where you're then wanting to still have a conversation and a dialogue, and, you know, not necessarily, of course, absolutely not wanting someone to feel unwelcome, because you want them to come back. That's at the end of the day, and you want people to feel comfortable in your space, regardless of if they're in studio or on the phone. But does it change a little bit, especially because Bravo stories are so specific?
That's super interesting. Well, I can't think of, I don't know, maybe nobody's listening to our radio show, but literally no Bravo celebrities ever call in. I think they're not up in the morning. They never call in. They probably have in the past, but that's definitely not something that happens. But there is Bravo stuff that comes through. And I think maybe a lot of people would be maybe more listened to if more, you know, Bravo content was there. But in the mornings, I don't know. We've also never discussed this in terms of curating the content as much. But, you know, we have, you know, people go on their junkets, people go through Sirius, and they make the interview rounds. So like today we had M. Kamau Bell or whatever, and Leslie Jordan. That's not because we spent weeks out saying, okay, this would be great. It's not like Watch What Happens Live. It's not like, okay, we want these two people. It's like, here's the talent coming through, and here's who's going to get interviewed and then prepare after that. That's not to say that Andy doesn't specifically say, hey, go get the guy who wrote the late night book, get him on. Like, it's probably 50-50 in terms of like people he's passionate with and also people who are doing press. But in terms of Bravo stuff, sometimes I'll say like, hey, there's this big Bravo story or whatever. And it's not necessarily the most important thing to talk about that day, because it is a timely live show every morning. Mm-hmm. And I think he likes to have it be that kind of a show, so that in my assumption, this isn't from him, I would assume that it's not, you know, he's very Bravo entrenched, and his whole life is Bravo mm-hmm. stuff, you know, at night, all day long. And I think it's probably refreshing to have the live show in the mornings on Sirius be a little air in there, so it can be about other stuff. Because, I mean, there is no one more well-read than Andy. Like, I was just about to say, like, when I was like, I'm not a journalist, I have not read a fraction of the amount of books he's read. You know, mm-hmm. he has mm-hmm. more to talk mm-hmm. about with these people who come on to interview them. I'm kind of like, oh, cool, what were you in? So in answer to your question, the temperature changes. When Bravo people come on, or when there is a subject about that, it does, I've noticed that some of the Bravo people come on with it is about the subject at hand. So like someone comes on and it's a little bit like, okay, here's what I want to say about the story about me. They're not coming on to shoot the shit or to chat about the world at large, with the exception of someone like Bethany. She could talk to anybody about anything all day long, and it's kind of a more entertaining thing because she's a great talk show guest. Mm-hmm. When someone else comes on, it's a little bit like, here's what I want to say about me and my storyline and what I think about that. Not like, oh, hey, what'd you think about, you know, the march today or whatever. You know, they want to talk about, you know, how it relates to them and their storyline and their next few shows in the future.
I completely hear that. And putting aside W. Kamau Bell and Leslie Jordan, with the Housewives, you watch a show about entertainment. You know, it's a different thing from discussing a drama and someone's upset about an arc involving a certain character. And so that actress is going on TV shows to promote the show. And she might also be responding to pushback from the audience who doesn't necessarily like the direction or is upset about a character's choice. The stakes are so much different when you are yourself on one of these shows and someone's like, I hate that thing that you did, or I hate you now, regardless of whether or not you feel that is a performative version of yourself. If you are hearing from people that they're like, well, fuck, blah, blah, blah. I mean, the stakes are a lot different, especially when people are kind of unpacking these shows. You know, it is a different experience, I think.
I guess maybe looking at Watch What Happens Live from inception was like an after show about these shows, which then spurred on all these other shows like Talking Dead and all these after shows, because they're about the show you just watched. And you get into the nitty gritty, you get into the deep cuts, you get into like, well, in season two, you said this, do you still think that? And it's people who watch the show that are fans and they want to see the person. Oh my God, we just watched them. Let's see what they have to say now, live, unscripted, uncensored. Let's see what they have to say. On the morning show, it's like, someone doing press is like, oh yeah, here's what I have to say about the thing that happened last night. And the only thing they have to say looking ahead is you'll have to wait and see. There's not as much interview there, you know, in my opinion, because the show is not an after show about the show you just watched. It's wake up in the morning, you have work ahead. What are the things in the news? Oh, they found 10,000 pounds of meth disguised as pickles in Texas. That was one of the stories today we didn't get to. But that's what we want to make.
No, that did not happen.
It did. You can look it up. Yeah. And
oh my that God. Kind of, I love a pickle. All right.
Or you want to, I bet you seem like it. you're a little methy. Like today, it's like, well, we want to talk about the Oscars and how terrible they were. It's not like we want to talk to this person from a docuseries in Canada about their story arc. Or maybe we do. I don't know. It's just kind of like, what, you know, what's happening today? We want to talk about this for an hour. The Oscars sucked. Leslie Jordan's going to come through. Love you. Oh, you have strep throat. That's crazy. Remember that time Leslie Jordan came on? He has strep throat. Okay. And now we're going to talk about more breaking news. So it's not a Bravo show. It's a SiriusXM live morning show.
Yeah. And it's in some ways a translation for the Bravo audience who are perhaps new to seeing that or reveal that side of your dynamic with Andy and of Andy's thoughts on these things, because the name of the network is Radio Andy. And a lot of these people are coming in through their relationship with them.
Exactly. And it's intrinsically
the network.
It's intrinsically Andy-ish. Sorry to interrupt you. Like it's going to be Bravo-ish. I mean, it's what I'm trying to say. Like it's going to be Bravo-ish. And there's no shying away from that. It is always like first and foremost, like obviously that's what, you know, the stuff is kind of about, but it's less of, in terms of our show in particular, it's like there's a lot talk about right off the top instead of like, well, okay, you know, imagine like here are all the shows that happened last night. We did a Watch What Happens Live after that. Let's talk again about the morning after, like who, you know, I don't know who'd be able to track all that stuff about who's talked about what to death and stuff. So I think it's for him probably a nice break to kind of talk about everything Bravo that you want to talk about, but also, yeah, you're right. Getting to know him and all the things he thinks about, you know, aside from that, and hearing his personal life, like his mornings with Ben and him going to Zazie's Pizza three times a week or whatever it was. And what he thought about the Oscars the night before, his trip to LA and Kardashian's reunion, you know, all, you know, to tune in to hear about that stuff.
How has your relationship or dynamic with him changed? I mean, it's one thing to be friends with someone. It's another thing to introduce professional relationships, which can be difficult. I've never done that on a public platform, but privately, I now have a rule of like, I'm not ever going to do anything work related with like family members.
Yeah.
Not fun for me. So is that ever, when it comes to the family of it all, is that ever, did you ever have to evolve a little bit or adjust a little bit to that, to a new kind of chapter for you guys?
Oh, for sure. Definitely. I mean, I feel like it's kind of always an adjustment. Anybody, It's been so long. It's been a couple of decades, you know? That's a long time. And I don't know if I realize that all the time. We started working together a long time ago. So we were across the country. So I would work on things in a much different capacity. He would be on the network side. I would produce for the production companies out here on a very low level, by the way. I was by no means like a shot caller. But when I was younger, yeah, I would work in the field on shows out here. But that was a good training, though, because it was like, I remember one time early on, I was working on Step It Up and Dance on Bravo, which was only one season.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Elizabeth with Nomi Malone. And only one season, it ended tragically. But I did, at one point, he and I talked. It was, you know, we went in thinking, oh, this is going to be fun. Great. And then at the end, we talked to the end of it. We didn't like talk out of school at all. And everyone knew their part. There was no like, oh, hey, don't talk to Andy. He's this or that. It was like, great. We're all friends. We're all professionals. This is going to work out great. Mm-hmm. And I talked to him like the day after we wrapped or something. Not like, okay, here's what went down. Nothing drama like that. But mm-hmm. then I think he spoke to one of my bosses. We're like, oh, yeah, I talked to John, blah, blah, blah. And I did have to, and then she and I spoke and it was like, hey, just like a tip, you know, don't forget, like Andy is still our, you know, network executive. And like, if he hears things that might sound differently to him than what we would want him to know or think, because mm-hmm. that relationship is, there is a hierarchy for a reason. And I was like, oh shit, right. And it wasn't like I fucked up or anything, but it was definitely like, oh, here's how it's going to work from now on. And in terms of like what you say, not that I was never, you know what I'm saying? So then after I kind of learned the way things were going to go from then on, and it was, if it had been difficult or a conflict of morality, I would have not continued, but it ended up being fine. And he's very good at that. He's very good at maintaining whatever boundary needs to happen to work with someone. For example, I mean, we worked on Watch What Happens Live for forever, and we were able to do that. And then we worked together. I guess it's changed because we're older, you know, and I guess it's probably changed for the better in a lot of ways, because I want the best for him. He wants the best for me, and to see the other one succeed, you know. And I guess I didn't love the idea that people were like, I love when you guys are in the morning together and you're like super bitchy with each other and give each other shit. I don't love that. I don't love that dynamic, or I don't love the takeaway that like, that's the thing. We like to give each other shit a little bit, but because we love each other, it's not that, like, nobody wants to be stuck in like your job, and your job is to be snatchy to the person you're working with.
Sure.
That's toxic after a while. It's been 6 years of like real work together. There was a certain line at Watch What Happens Live and these other shows that were like, we weren't working together on air the entire time. It was like, here's something I'm going to submit to my boss. It gets to him. He gives notes. Here's that. We can work together as closely as we want. But here it's like we're literally working together and collaborating on the air. There is, like I was saying, there's no going back to edit this stuff out. It's what you hear is what you get. And so that is something to navigate. Is that a good answer?
I mean, it's such a good answer. And I think it's that is life at some points. And it's a choice that you make and a dance that you do. It's a little bit of a delicate ballet, I think, in many places, because you have just as much of an interest in keeping the foundation of your friendship a certain way as you do to be able to together produce content that is interesting to people. And you don't want one to negatively affect the other, if that makes sense too. You know, like there are stakes in just being really good friends with someone.
Yeah.
And you don't, you know, to be like quote unquote bitchy to a person. I mean, I tell my friend, part of my love language is telling you to shut the fuck up. You know what
sure.
I'm saying? Like, it's a different, it is a different dynamic related to every single different relationship that you have with someone. When you introduce potentially hundreds of thousands of listeners, that can sometimes talk about changing the temperature in the room, because those people aren't aware of your day-to-day relationship with this person, your communication style. And so when that becomes translated in a public space, that can change things a little bit But I think that's also why it's so important to have a good foundational core so that as the waves come, regardless of whether or not they are real waves or things that someone thinks that they are hearing or feeling as a result, yeah, you guys maintain stasis.
I love him. I want the best for him. There's nothing that will change that. Literally nothing. There's been few people in my life that have been as loyal to me or generous to me than him. And so it's kind of like, there's not a radio show that will change anything about that. Having that foundation of like love and trust and loyalty, and the fact of the matter is that we'll always have each other back, frees us up to then have fun and to not be worried. No one's ever worried that like, oh, is so-and-so going to say something to piss me off and blah, blah, blah. We get pissed off each other all the time, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But it's like, whatever, we'll work that out at some point. And a lot of stuff, you know, does come on the radio show that people are like, oh my God, I heard you said this, blah, blah, that was funny. And we laugh each other's quirks off that other people might not be able to have, mm-hmm. you know, they wouldn't be cool with their friend or whatever, but we're able to kind of process and deal with things. But I think the love comes through. I love him, want the best for him. And I'm grateful that I get to, you know, who doesn't want to work on a radio show about, you know, in the mornings during the week? It's really fun. I love it.
I believe it. I think that's incredible. And yeah. I'm so appreciative that you came on AG and we did such an interesting deep dive in this combo. Oh my God.
What was even the subject?
I think the through line is, you know, how Bravo and all of us respond to all things life. I think that we can owe that to a little bit of our inspo from last night at the Oscars and just also being a part of this community, which I think is really interesting. Speaking of really interesting, tell me a little bit about the feels. Tell me what you're working on, what you have on the calendar, how people can support you, follow you online, all of that good stuff.
Do follow me. Please do.
Yes.
I'm John Arthur Hill on Instagram. I'm the boss of you on Twitter. Follow me there. That's a rocket's good time,
handle.
I'm sure. I was de-verified when I got hacked, and I'm cool. I'm not the biggest Twitterer. It's fine. I got hacked. And let's see. Listen to Chart Flashback this week on SiriusXM Stars. Just go look for it and on the app and listen to The Feels. It's every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific. It's really fun. It's an hour. I have a guest co-host every week. It changes. Nice. We talk about different things of the week. It's a live show. Again, we take breaking news and just talk about how we feel about it. You can call in. It's live. You can call in 844-305-2639. And Andy come live every Monday and Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern. You should come on The Feels. Come on.
Will you come on? Oh my God, I would love it. It would be a pleasure.
Oh my God.
It would be a
pleasure. Please come on. Ben Rimmelauer is a frequent guest.
He is our favorite. Yeah. What I've already forgotten the phrase that he said. I was about to call it octopussy, but I know that's
Octobottom.
Octobottom, our favorite Octobottom pal. It would be a pleasure to, and it was a pleasure having you on Andy's Girls. I can't tell you how much I've been looking forward to talking to you. And you were everything I was hoping for and more. I'm so appreciative.
I'm so appreciative. I really had a great time talking to you. I think you're the greatest. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you. That's going to be the new advertising. Can't wait to see that on the side of a bus any day now. You're the best. Guys, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. You can follow me online on Instagram at Dame Galley. As I mentioned during the ep, a 1-hour special bonus episode on the Andy Scrolls Patreon where I very much deep dive the Oscars with Kevin Fallon Sr. and your entertainment reporter at The Daily Beast. Thank you again. This was so special. I would love to have you back whenever you're available and to continue the combo, John Hill, because I think you're such a delight.
Anytime. Can't wait to come
Amazing.
Back.
Amazing. Thank you so much, guys. Stay safe and sane. Get vaccinated if you can, and we will talk to you soon. Bye.